I was interested to read today on autosport.com that Mercedes has become the first Formula One team to exceed a turnover of £500 million. So, what's that? £1 for every time Lewis Hamilton fans have felt disappointed in the last 3 years? Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. It's not just me, but it's him as well, connected via the undernet from the depths of North Wales to the depths of groovy West London, Zog. Hi, brother. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Not bad, thanks. Not bad.
I'm pleased that we're remaining in contact despite the huge physical distance between us. We don't see any less of each other, do we, than we did when I lived in London?
Progress has given us video conferencing and telephones. I mean, yeah, well, hey, it's almost like you're around the corner.
I'm looking forward to matter transportation. How long do you reckon before we've got matter transportation?
Well,
there are one or two issues with it, aren't there?
In all seriousness, given that there's an issue in quantum mechanics with duplicating information,
yeah,
it's a no-no.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to say matter transportation, probably never. Unfortunately,
yeah.
You know, it'd be nice.
I remember asking Heisenberg about it and he said he was uncertain.
Hey.
Thank you very much. Hey, Zog, it's a how for you, right? I've been thinking, here's a how, like the old days, right?
Come on.
How is an alpha like a sausage?
It's a load of fabulous meat contained in a very flimsy skin that isn't going to last very long. I don't know.
Very good.
That's the best I can come up with.
Yeah, the meat is good. The skin is going to fall apart. That's actually better than what I was going to offer. It's just something I read today that Alfa Romeo were about to release a new EV around about the same size as the Peugeot 208. It shares the platform with it, of course, as does the upcoming Ancia Ypsilon. So this new Alfa was going to be called the Alfa Romeo Milano. Perfect, right? That's a good name for an alpha. We've used it before, haven't we?
Yeah. And oh, does this have to do with where it's made?
Correct.
Ah.
There is apparently a bylaw or a national law, some legal statute in Italy, that says if an Italian purported car has an Italian name, it has to be built in Italy, and the car is going to be built in Poland at the Stellantis factory, the Vichy factory that produces Fiat 500s and all sorts of other things. And so it's going to be built there, so they can't call it Milano, so they're going to call it Junior.
Okay.
Yeah, good name for it, the Alfa Junior.
Alfa Junior, yeah. No, I like that's good.
Why is it like cheap a sausage? Name. Well, you know, you can only buy a Cumberland sausage if it's made in Cumberland to the Cumberland recipe. You can buy what are sold as Cumberland-style sausages, can't you? There's some legal framework. It's almost like a tribute to. So in the same way that the Alfa can't be called Milano, it's not a real Milano. Fair enough.
Why didn't they just go with the Polski? You could go the Alfa Romeo Polski. That would be a...
Makes perfect sense.
Label, wouldn't it? What's, nothing wrong with that.
Polski Fiat.
Nothing wrong with a car being built in Poland and advertising it.
Yeah. Some of the greatest Fiats have been built in Poland. Controversial, but I think it may be true. Maybe true. So there's my how. Okay, here's another how.
I like it.
How exciting is Formula One at the moment?
Well, okay, I should just, a small confession. For the last race, Japan, I didn't watch it live. I was going to record it and watch it on Sunday morning. Now, in fact, there was some problem with the Skybox and the recording didn't work. But there's a catch-up service on Sky TV, so even if you haven't set something to record, you can find something that's been on recently and it'll download it on the fly and you can watch it on this catch-up. So, no problem. I can watch the race using the catch-up service, which I do. Start watching the race. As it gets underway, there was just a couple of slightly odd things. I thought, what happened to Perez? I thought he's qualified second. He seems to be down in seventh. Maybe he got a grid penalty. But, you know, the rest of the grid looked okay. And then as we got further into the lap, there were another couple of things that had bothered me. The Sauber. you know, Sauber has a lovely green livery. That's Spike Sauber, Sauber Spike, whatever.
Yeah.
They've got a nice green
livery. Was it red and white?
Yeah, this was red and white. That's last year's livery, isn't it? Okay. You know, last year's race was available on the catch-up.
Yeah.
As it started, because the driver lineup hasn't changed at all since last year, there was nothing to give away the fact that it was last year's race, other than Lawson in Ricciardo's seat. But when I watched qualifying, Lawson was in the garage, and I remembered seeing him in the garage. And so I just had this...
Gives credence, yeah.
Okay, so Ricciardo's had some medical, you know, not making the link to... Anyway, so there we go. So here's another downside to the driver lineup not changing at all from year to year, that you could start watching last year's race and not know what's going on.
And more so, right, the story hasn't changed from 12 months ago. It's still the Red Bulls stomping over everybody and everyone
picking
up the scraps, you know. And that's what ultimately I was referring to, that the racing itself, and we always say this, and I'm going to have to say this, if you ignore the front two cars, the racing down the grid is very interesting. We always have to say that. It's the truth. But I do wish it was mixed up a bit at the moment. But the point is, Zog, how interesting is Formula One at the moment? Well, the racing might not be interesting, but the movements within the driver market are, aren't they?
Yeah, that suddenly got a lot more active after we had, you know, a transition from last year into 2024 when, as we just discussed, nothing changed, which is pretty dull.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Hamilton announces he's going to Ferrari, and then things start opening up, and yeah, all of a sudden, the driver's market is alive.
Yeah, there's been a bit of a ripple effect now that Lewis has made his decision, and Alonso in the last week has made his decision, what he's going to do in the game of musical chairs, you know, you race for the best seat available. So I think that's how we should look at it, Zog. Let's look at the best driver and the best seat, because that's what's going to happen. Now, what is the best seat outside of Red Bull?
Well, that's probably, at the moment, that's got to be Ferrari.
Yeah.
The Ferrari seats are accounted for.
Yeah.
We know it's going to be Leclerc and Hamilton next year. I think McLaren are probably the next best.
I agree.
Would be the next best seat at the moment. But again, that is not going to change. You know, Norris and Piastri are solidly in those seats for next year. So, yeah, McLaren's out.
Mm-hmm.
So Mercedes is probably the best available seat, I would say. And I think Sainz probably looks a fairly good bet to go there. It would seem a bit odd to have this straight swap.
It's happened in the past. I remember when Alesi and Berger left Ferrari to make room for Schumacher and Irvine. They went to the two vacant seats in Benetton at the time.
That's right.
Together.
Yeah.
The mates, as they were called. It has happened. So it can happen. Yeah, it can happen. So this straight swap for Sainz and Hamilton would make great sense. I reckon that would be Toto's plan B. I think his plan A, Zog, is to secure Verstappen if he truly is interested in coming.
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, see, that's an interesting one, because kind of all but ruled out Verstappen moving next year, I think. When Red Bull were hit with the Horner texting scandal a couple of months ago, it looked as if there was definitely friction within the team. There was definitely conflict between different bits of Red Bull, and that could be, you know, severe enough to impact the future of drivers. And yeah, and maybe it could be something that would lead to Verstappen leaving the team. That certainly looked conceivable, but it seems that whatever might be going on internally at the moment, it's sufficiently low level of tension, of drama, that we're hearing very little about it on the outside. I think that's passed. I think Verstappen's going to be there. They've got a tremendously successful working relationship. They built a team around Verstappen. Either party would have to be pretty unhappy in order to break that up at this point. And I don't get the sense that impetus is going to be there. So, yeah, Verstappen staying at Red Bull, that seat isn't coming up.
If I've understood it correctly, the schism at Red Bull is very little to do with the recent texting scandal. I understand that the tension within Red Bull at the moment is coming from the void left by the death of Dieter Mateschitz, and who ultimately becomes the controller of Red Bull. And the two factions seem to be what's loosely described as the Austrian side and the Thai side. They're the two big shareholders of Red Bull GmbH.
Yeah.
It seems that the Thai side favour Christian Horner as the man to inherit the mantle, whereas the Austrians favour Helmut Marko to take that. Now, I'm sure those two people get on, and the battle is not between them as individuals. It's about the power brokers and who wants to support which member. It's a business, right? So this is what apparently is making Verstappen unhappy, because he's very wedded to Helmut Marko. And there was a report this week that Mercedes were said to be discussing Max coming to Mercedes and bringing Helmut Marko with him.
Huh.
Now, there's the sweetener. That solves the problem. How useful he is to Mercedes, who've got a very carefully constructed management structure, I don't know. But just in order to get Max, is that what you'd do?
My quick take, that would be, you know, if that was the offer that Mercedes were considering, I'd have thought they'd jump at that, obviously, and deal with the problem of what to do with Marko, if that was considered a problem, given that you're getting, you know, another very experienced F1 and racing figure. You'd figure out what to do with him later. So, yeah, why wouldn't they go for that? But, okay, so maybe that is still a live issue. We'll see. I mean, just from the success that they're having together at the moment.
You'd be daft to leave that team, wouldn't you?
And arguably, particularly for Mercedes at the moment, when if you were going to go somewhere, wouldn't you go to a team that maybe had a better prospect of winning championships? Then again, you know, Mercedes should be back in that position before too long. You know, reversion to the mean. They've had a big dip. They should be on and up.
Well, think about it from Mercedes' point of view. This might not be in Max and Marco's mind, but Mercedes would love to steal Max Verstappen. It's a double win, isn't it? They stop this driver from driving in the best car and they get him in your car. It's like a 10% and then another 10%. You know what I mean? It prevents other teams from having this advantage as well as giving it to you.
So how likely do you think this scenario is to play out? Because I think this is very unlikely. I can't see this being a...
Yeah, it's impossible to say, because wild things do happen in Formula One, like Lewis signing to Ferrari. I think that's kind of wild. And wilder things have happened in the past.
Yeah, and we'd had rumours of that, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't completely out of the blue, you know. It was certainly a surprise, but there'd been rumours that it had been talked about.
There is so much rumour and speculation about the driver market at the moment, it's impossible to understand what's really happening. But I think what we are getting glimpses of, most journalists, the only information they get is from decoding what an official answer has been from a team head, or by seeing someone having a meeting with someone. And I'm pretty sure that all these parties are talking. Sainz is talking to Mercedes. Sainz is talking to Red Bull. Sainz is talking to Audi. Sainz is talking to... he's not talking to Aston Martin anymore, but he's talking to Mercedes, you know. And equally, Mercedes will be trying to find out what Max's position is. So there's clearly a dialogue going on. It just depends on preference and, you know, when the music stops, which seat you sit in. I think Bottas is going to lose out pretty soon. You know about this?
Right, I was going to say, we should carry on sort of moving down the list of drivers or seats that are available. Okay, so Bottas, he's out of contract at the end of this year, I think. And he hasn't signed with anyone for next year. Will he continue at Sauber? Will Joe continue at Sauber? What's your take on that?
I think it would be easier to keep Joe on than it would be to keep Bottas on. There are inherent advantages of having a Chinese driver who's very good, I think, in that car. I also think that it's going to be a long journey for that team to becoming competitive Audi top grade team. So, there's talk of, and this is consistent, that Hulk will go to Sauber next year and remain with them for a year or two whilst they transition to Audi. That would be great for him. That would be great. He ain't going to win any races, but I gave up that hope a long time ago.
Yeah, and Haas also have both of their drivers with contracts up for renewal at the end of this year. Do you think they're going to drop both drivers, or you think they're going to hang on to Kevin Magnussen? I thought they'd maybe be more likely to drop Magnussen than Hulk. And maybe, I was thinking they might put Behrmann in that seat.
I'm certain of it.
In his very brief race outing this year, you know, he's demonstrated that he's got the skills to deliver in an F1 seat. I think anyone that had a chance to sign him, any, you know, mid or back of the grid team that had a chance to sign him would absolutely love to do that. And given Haas's connection to Ferrari, you know, I think Ferrari would love to have him in a race seat, get him warmed up on the back burner before they, you know,
use him to replace Lewis or Leclerc when he's out of fashion in 2 years' time. Agreed.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a cert that Behrmann will go into Haas. I hope so. I really hope so. We've jumped a whole bunch of teams. We missed out. We know McLaren are locked out.
Yeah.
Aston Martin are now locked out for the foreseeable future.
Well, yeah, now, as I understand it, because Alonso re-signed and Stroll is on a rolling contract. They're just sort of, you know, renewing it and you're renewing it. I mean, I did read that they put out a couple of quite strong sort of statements of support for Stroll after Alonso signing. You know, they were talking about how they got very good feedback from him. So he's a valuable driver in that sense. He's just inconsistent. You know, he's...
No, he isn't. No, he's consistently miserable.
Poor Lance.
I don't think anything's going to change there for the moment.
No, agreed.
I could be wrong. Let's have a think. Who else have we got? Alpine.
Again, both drivers out of contract at the end of this year.
Some talk that Ocon is an option at Mercedes because he's still technically a Toto managed driver. But I can't see that happening. I don't think Ocon's star material enough for Mercedes, who will target the very best.
Well, and I think Alpine have had a terrible start to the year. You can't blame the drivers for that.
No.
But it doesn't make them any more attractive to other teams. And I think it also means that whatever Alpine need to fix or change, it's not the drivers. They shouldn't be messing about with changing drivers at the moment when they can hang on to two pretty quick, pretty experienced drivers who are way better than their car deserves.
Yeah, and they're a good benchmark, right? You know, when you've got change like that, you need someone who's absolutely capable of understanding the comparative difference between last year's car or last race's car and this year or this race's car. Yeah, you need that consistency. How about RB or whatever they're called today?
My thinking is that Ricciardo is looking a little bit tired now. He's looking a little bit...
Lawsonable,
yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Sonoda's, I think, exceeded expectations and been very strong. He's been quicker than Ricciardo most of the time. So, yeah, I think there's a good chance that they would look to Liam Lawson as a replacement for Ricciardo. I think, yeah, there's a very good chance that Lawson will be in that seat next year alongside Sonoda.
And then in 2 years, Sonoda will replace Stroll in the Aston Martin Honda, I reckon.
Okay.
Because of the Honda connection.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. What about Williams then? I had a thought there.
Yeah, Antonelli will replace Logan Sargeant next year. Albon will stay at Williams. I don't think Red Bull are going to get rid of Perez for Albon. If they got rid of Perez, I think they put Sainz in.
I think I agree with all of that.
Yeah, wow.
I think I don't agree with all that. Exactly, yeah. Mercedes are interested in Antonelli, but they're not going to put him into a silver arrow. But they can do exactly what they did with Russell.
Yeah.
Put him in at Williams, get him some experience in the Williams and get a better assessment of his ability. And then in a couple of years, maybe they can bring him on board. That seems the right thing to do.
So there's one spare seat at Haas that we haven't fulfilled. Could that be Valtteri Bottas?
I think they might hang on to Hülkenberg. Maybe they'll ditch them both, but I think they might hang on to Hulk.
We love him.
I've been a little bit disappointed in how K-Mag's done since he came back in for his last stint. I was hoping for a little bit more. I think they might hang on to Hülkenberg, and they'll have the new blood. They've got their new guy in Behrmann, and then the more experienced hand to anchor the team a bit and give the young guy an older teammate to give him a bit of support. So, yeah, that's what I think will happen there.
So F1 is interesting at the moment. We love playing this guessing game. You know, I don't imagine anything that we've just said in the last few minutes is going to bear any relation to how it plays out. But it's great fun guessing, and that's why we love this sport. Zog, it's been lovely catching up with you, Mucker. Speak to you soon.
Lovely to see you, man. Lovely to see you. Take it easy.
Bye. Drivers' market, drivers' market, get your F1 drivers here. Oh, hello there. How much are your F1 drivers? Well, depends on how much you want to spend, darling. You can have a fresh Sainz for $5 million or an Antonelli for $6 million. Why is the Antonelli cheaper than the Sainz? Well, it's not quite ripe yet, love. No, not for me. What else do you have? Well, special offer today on an Ocon and Gasly. $2 million for the pair. I won't separate them, though. What about this one? Perfect for you, because you got a lovely smile. A race winner, only £250. What is it? Shipped over from Australia, darling. A Daniel Ricciardo. Well, I can't turn that down. Here's £250. There you go, love. Thank you. Have a lovely day. Why is it so cheap? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? It's past its sell-by date. Whee! In the previous episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, which was only 7 days ago, I introduced you to Phil Williams, a chap who's become a mate of mine over the last 10 years, and I'm currently lodging in his house in North Wales. So we spend an awful lot of time, Phil and I, talking about cars. And we enjoyed the conversation so much in last week's show, I thought we'd do it again and find out a bit more about my mate and my landlord. I thought I'd make a guess about when Phil passed his driving test. Let me guess. I bet you passed your driving test within 6 weeks of being 17. And am I right in thinking that you passed it in that Hillman Imp that you bought for £50, your first car, or am I wrong?
No, you're wrong. I passed my test on my second attempt in my driving instructor's car, which was so nondescript, I can't even remember what it was.
And do you remember why you failed the first time?
Yeah, the main reason I think I failed the first time was when I got into the car with the examiner, I said hello and good morning to him, and he just completely ignored me. He didn't acknowledge that I'd even spoken to him, which took me aback and put me in quite a bad mood. So I failed my first test, passed it the second time easily.
I passed my test in America, in California, in a 1985, I think, Oldsmobile Brougham. That was my friend Summer's car, who she loaned me. I arrived one day and mentioned as she drove me from the airport that I should take my test while I'm over here. And she said, OK. I woke up the next day and she booked me a test for the day after, loaned me her car, got me insurance on her car, gave me a copy of the California Driver's Handbook, which I sat and read in a diner for a day, and then took the test, having never driven the car before, and passed. Scraped a pass, I think, but passed. Remember being told that my observation was very good. It was great. But yeah, passing the test is hard, man. In Britain, they're trying to catch you out, and they caught you out, didn't they? In America, they want you to pass. It's a different attitude. So, all right, was I right about within 6 weeks? It can't have been if you failed on your first test.
No, it would have been about 8 or 9 weeks, I think, put in for another test straight away and got a cancellation. But the nicest thing I remember about passing my test was I passed my test and went back to work. And when I finished work and walked outside, my dad had left my car outside work for me with the keys in it.
Oh, rites of passage, that is.
Yeah, that was lovely, that, yeah.
What's the most extraordinary things you've ever driven? You got a list of top hits?
Probably the most extreme car I've ever driven was my brother's Mark 1 M5. I'd never got behind the wheel of anything with as much go as that, because, of course, we're talking a long time ago now. I think the Mark 1 M5 was probably 4 or 5 years old, so that'll give you an idea of when it was. And I was let out on my own in the M5, and the first car I tried to overtake, I got up nice and close behind it, waited for a gap coming the other way in the traffic, knocked it down a gear, floored it, and nearly drove it straight into the back of the car in front of me.
It's one of those cars that's suddenly at the horizon.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably haven't driven anything with quite as much get up and go at that
nothing,
point.
Nothing like that, no. No.
There is a different league of car out there, isn't there? You know, I've driven some absolute monsters. I enjoyed driving Lotuses because it puts you at the horizon and at the roundabout much quicker than you realise. And Mercedes SLR, I went to Spa in once, huge long bonnet. You felt like you're riding some kind of interstellar vehicle that could just travel at warp speed, and we did. We drove very quickly for a very long time across Belgium. That was something. Where did you drive that M5 here in North Wales?
Locally. Yeah,
there's some good roads here that you can let go on. Well, there used to be before the 20 mph speed limit came in, mate, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, probably the most extreme road, very local to here, is the Marine Drive around the Great Orme.
Of course,
which it was a fantastic, really taxing, testing road, that is.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever watched the World Rally Championship on TV in the days of the Lombard RAC Rally, it used to have a stage that went around the Marine Drive around the Great Orme, which I drove the other day with Phil. But they did it more recently. In the last couple of races, they had a stage around the Orme. It's just like Monaco, isn't it? It's quite a drop on the other side into the Irish Sea.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. There's not a lot there to stop you plunging to your death if you make if you make a mess of a bend, yeah.
It's like motorsport used to be in the old days. Motorsport is dangerous. You driven much race machinery? Have you ever driven a rally car?
No. The closest I've come really is a tuned Hillman Imp.
Yeah.
Not really. No, let's say the M5's the only thing that's had a serious amount of go. My little Triumph 2 litre. That was a testing fun car to drive.
Yeah, at relatively safe speeds.
Yeah, but very predictable.
Yeah, a car that slides a little bit. I've always said that anyone who drives should have at some point in their life owned either a Mini or a Morris 1000 or a Volkswagen Beetle. Learn what it's like to drive with a car with a limited amount of grip and you'll understand how understeer and oversteer works.
Yeah, I've always found a rear-wheel drive car more predictable if things go wrong.
Yeah.
Much more difficult, I think, in a front-wheel drive car to regain control. Basically, what you're looking at there is just taking your foot off the gas and hoping for the best, really. Waiting for your grip on your front wheels to come back.
Oh, I've been doing two jobs, steering and driving. I can't do both. Poor front-wheel drive cars. Have you driven stuff that isn't strictly a car? Have you driven anything unusual?
The only unusual thing I've driven is Bedford 4x4s, 4-tonners. They're quite a remarkable machine, really. I think the RLs that I drove had about 140 horsepower from not far off a 6-litre diesel. But it's not about the horsepower in a machine like that. It's about what they call tractive efforts. So that particular truck, even ticking over, I remember one time a friend of mine was trying to empty a barn on the Slim Peninsula, and there was 5 dead cars in the barn with no wheels on. And we tied some of them together and chained them to the back of the RL, and it just dragged all 5 cars out of there with just no effort whatsoever.
Wow.
You know.
Low gearing.
Yeah.
You've driven forklifts, haven't you?
Not strictly forklifts, but I've driven tractors with forks on the front. Yeah, I think I was telling you a story early on about losing control of a tractor and putting the front forks through a storeroom wall and coming quite close to decapitating 2 fellas in a queue.
on the
other side of the wall. Oh, yeah, no. That was quite a fright for them, yeah. I always think, when I remember that incident, I always think, oh my God, how bad that could have been.
Dear me. Man spears Welshman on forklift tractor. I remember driving a road roller with me dad once. Dad used to help out and play at Carmel Cricket Club outside of Holywell. And they used to keep the, is it called the green where you play cricket, or is that bowls? I don't know. But they had a road roller that they borrowed from a local farmer. And we had to go and collect it and drive down these country lanes and off into the field. And Dad used to let me drive it with him. I must have been about 10 years old, 12 years old. I don't know what the laws say, but that was an experience. I mean, very hard to make a mistake at those sort of speeds. But if you do make a mistake with a road roller, you know, if anyone's driving a Lotus there, you could flatten it. Oh, that'd be terrible. You ever driven a road roller?
I haven't, no. I've driven dumpers, 4x4s, bendy dumpers.
Articulated front loading.
Yeah, they're quite amazing things. You know, even loaded up with 5-ton in the front bucket, they're just so capable. They just go anywhere, really, with those directional tread tyres on, yeah.
Plant and machinery. I've had a go at a small, it wasn't a JCB, I think it was a Komatsu, but hydraulic shovel arm. I had a go at one of those. A mate of mine had one of those in his garden. He had some land. It was great fun making holes and moving stuff around with that. Don't know if that's driving, is it? It's operating a machine.
Yeah, how good you can get on one of those in the short space that you get to drive one. You look at people that do it for a living and they're just incredible with those machines, really.
Yeah. I always think that the interface on a, what do you call those, trench shovel, is that what it is? An articulated hydraulic trench shovel arm, whatever.
360 excavator.
Is that what it is? A 360. I always think that the interface on that is wrong. Because you've got a lever to open the bucket and close the bucket. You've got a lever to reach the upper arm, a lever to reach the lower arm. It's sort of counterintuitive. I think in the cab, they ought to have a model of that arm that's, what, 30 centimetres long, a foot long, like an RC model. And you hold the bucket where you want and you just do the action you want with the bucket and shovel and move, and that arm reads all the instructions to the full size one. Got to be a better system, isn't it?
Well, they all work on a pair of joysticks now, don't they? Maybe right, 360s and
fly by wire, dig by wire.
I've never gone there. I've never even, when I've had jobs that needed doing, I've never even bothered to hire one. I just get somebody in
because of the learning time.
By the time you've worked out how everything works and start to get the hang of something, the guy that does it for a living is been, done it and gone.
How about boats? Done any interesting motorboats?
No, I've driven a Fletcher speedboat, 14-foot speedboat, with only about 150 horsepower outboard on the back, but it just seems incredibly fast when you're moving over water.
Yeah.
Even when it's calm.
Yeah, it's hard water. I went on an offshore powerboat off Whitehaven, I think, a long time ago, and it was like being beaten up, punched repeatedly.
Hammers, I worked for a fella a few years ago, and he had, is it a Sea-Doo, like a mini speedboat, not a jet ski, they're like a mini speedboat.
Personal watercraft.
Yeah, that had, I think it was a 1300 Kawasaki race prepped engine in it, and it would do 95 knots, so that's over 100 mile an hour, isn't it? 105 mile an hour, maybe. But he said that the sea would have to be literally like glass before you could go anything like that fast. Otherwise, it's so uncomfortable and dangerous.
You ever been down in a submarine?
No.
Nor me.
No, I wouldn't want to.
Wouldn't do it. Better on the surface. You've got to be nuts to be a submariner. What's the worst crash you've ever witnessed or been involved in?
I've never been involved in any bad crashes. They've all been minor bumps. One, my fault, and three, it was somebody else's fault, you know. But thankfully, I've never been in a really bad crash. I've seen a few. Years ago, my brother's mate ran a garage and recovery service down in Conway. I went there to visit my brother, and they'd recovered one of the old Opel Mantas that two Scousers had stolen.
Classic. GTE, Manta GTE.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, was it called GTE? Yeah.
And the guy that owned the garage, Steve, said, stick your head in there and have a look. And apparently they'd hit a bank on a B road and turned it over onto its roof and gone bouncing down the road upside down. And half of one guy's scalp was all over the roof line, the headliner. Yeah, it was pretty gory, that. Yeah.
Wow. I had a similar experience in a Volkswagen Jetta once, but climbed out through the rear window. Mercifully, the safety cell saved my scalp. And it was in the days when I was gas top, so there was a lot of scalp to save.
True.
Okay, we've covered this before. What you want, apart from an S2000, a Honda S2000.
Another Honda S2000.
You didn't say
to
replace, that.
To replace the first one, that I would probably crash.
Huge thanks to Phil Williams for having me in his house and sitting down, let me record Talking Cars with him. That's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. Don't forget, Google Podcasts has officially come to an end now. So if that's how you were getting this podcast, you might want to find another way. We're on Spotify, as you know, we're on Amazon Music, and it's on YouTube. So as they say, if you do follow the show on any of those outlets, please share, like and subscribe, and tell everyone how wonderful this podcast is. It's the only way we can keep it going. Okay, you guys, if you're going to be at the CV show in Birmingham this week between the 23rd and the 25th, I'll see you there. Until then, bye.
If you enjoyed the show, then please like and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read some lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor the podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.